This is Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, the radio program that challenges the anti-aging cultural narrative for women in midlife. Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous is produced at CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus-based community station at Simon Fraser University, which is located on the unceded ancestral homelands of the Squamish, Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem peoples. We broadcast a new episode on the second Wednesday of the month between 10 and 11 a.m. Good morning. I am Robin Erickson, and I talk with women who are aging outside the beauty myth and into their power, honoring their experience and celebrating their strength. This is episode number 6, I do believe. Or maybe I'm miscounting and it's episode number 7. At any rate, I am here with my guest today, Tara Kowalski, who helps renovate conflict in the workplace and is a passionate lifelong learner. And her focus lately is on loneliness in the workplace and what it is that we can do to cultivate love. Let's get started. And thanks for being my guest. Welcome to the show, Tara.
Oh, I am so excited. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited also. It's always a pleasure to have people on the show and have a conversation about what makes us at over 50 powerful and interesting and unique. So I want to get started by asking you, what is your triple threat? You know, when I named the show Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, it pointed to three things that are a threat to the patriarchy. And, you know, I recognize that as women, we all have our superpowers. What would you say are your top three?
My top three. Well, and even that is a hard question for me because I'm a complex thinker and I'm thinking about all of these ideas. So as a result of that, I would say I'm probably pretty creative to the point of problem solving that it frustrates people. Too many ideas, Tara. So and yet I have loved the creative process. I love transforming things into peaceful places, and then I expect that we're going to have more issues or conflict or whatever, and we're going to get to that peace again. So I believe I like that process of problem solving or getting to those places of peace, yeah, and acceptance. I love to laugh. I don't find myself very funny. I work hard at being funny, but usually it doesn't land very well. And I love laughing. I love And learning has been really important for me, striving to achieve that self-acceptance. And I have a couple of degrees and a couple of certificates. And I even learned about my assertion style by taking horseback riding lessons 3 years ago. And there's just something about the learning process that's really important for me. And in my house, I'm often called an ask-hole because ask, because I ask too many questions at times. And so I like those things about me, my laughter, ability to create and overcome problems, and that openness that comes with that, and also my desire to learn and become authentic and grow into that.
Nice superpowers, I must say, and I definitely resonate with all of them. being quite a lifelong learner myself, and you know, the person in the room with a whole lot of ideas all the time, and I think also, you know, this idea of questioning. And asking too many questions, I'm not sure that we can do that You know, sometimes we're not listening and asking enough questions, I think. So, yeah, definitely a superpower in the world where, you know, sometimes we think we know too much.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, though, that sometimes questions, depending on if they're appropriate or what kind of questions we're asking, are they open or are they there to shame us, or are the questions a way of avoidance, or are questions part of the process to get to that understanding? You know, I think about Marilyn, one of your other podcasts, and she talked about how when she was young, she asked questions of others quite a bit, and then she started to ask questions of herself. And I'm asking those questions of myself, and they're more intentional. And then when I look at the people that I'm inspired by, they're not asking questions of themselves anymore, but they're asking questions of others to empower and witness that aha moment. Mm-hmm. And so I just think questions are so fascinating. And for some people, questions can shut them down. And in the spirit of building connection and to change things, I think it's about knowing those questions and that questions by themselves need to be paired with something else, whether it's summarizing and saying, hey, I'm trying to hear you, or I understand you, or making a link to something else so that people can let go of something, move forward. Questions by themselves need to be paired with compassion. They need to be paired with summarizing. They need to be compared with assertion, or paired with assertion. Questions by themselves aren't effective, in my opinion. They need to be paired and supported by other things.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, just everything there. And how that was packaged, where it's not just about questioning, but it's really about sort of the intentionality behind the questions and how they're posed and for what reasons. Mm-hmm. And the empowerment that some questions can provide on the other side, so that they're not shaming.
Yeah.
That's really, really important and really critical, I think. But also artful.
Isn't it? I agree, it's artful. I love asking questions and hearing somebody's response and then building on that. That creative process is so exciting, and it's connecting. And in order to do that, I need to share what I'm thinking as well. You know, if we ask too many questions, it can seem like an interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, questions, it is an art and it is a science. And the purpose of questions are to build connection and linkages. And we need to hear the other voice as well. And people need to hear my voice and my perspective so that we can then ask yet another question and then come up with an idea that's going to create some peace. Because I think the spinning of questions is problematic. Questions without some vision that achieves a vision or action plan or helps us experience that question afterwards, it's just a question.
Well, hopefully the questions that I ask you today in our conversation will lead to some kind of not just spinning of wheels, but actually like spinning of ideas and spinning of resonances and causing someone to act
and live it and make it within. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Love it.
So three superpowers that I ask everybody about in the show start with daring. Oh. And the superpower of daring. Mm. So I'm wondering how you see yourself within daring, or if you see yourself as daring at all, and what that might mean and look like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, in the work that I do, I need to be daring. I need to say things that others won't say. So there's a candor that comes with that daring, a courage that comes with saying something. In fact, I was talking to somebody yesterday, and it clearly was resistance to having my services in their team. And so I called them up afterwards, and I said, hey, I just want to launch this and see how it fits for you. But because in order for this process to be really good for your team, we need to have some openness, preparation, all of these things. And I'm experiencing resistance, and I just want to put that out there and let's talk about it. And so I think how we're daring requires some courage and compassion. And it's risk-taking. Some of the people that I work with will say, well, I don't want to hurt their feelings. And I'm like, you can't even plan for that. You can't plan for that because we don't know what's going on the other side or how they're going to take it. And sometimes it's better to get it in the room and have the discussion and do the cleanup afterwards. That whole commitment to working through something with someone else is daring. A lot of us want to avoid it and walk out of the room. Working through the emotionality of that is courageous. It's daring. And so, yeah, daring is a big piece for me in the work that I do now. In parts of my life, I'm not so daring. Yeah, I'm kind of scared. I'm working on some of that stuff. I will not lie. But where I have responsibility, where I have confidence, where I've got some experience and knowledge and informal theory that I could say, wow, I'm going to be more daring. Or the opposite of that is when something's really new for me, I'm going to be very daring because I want to learn about it. I'm going to invest in it. It's when fear starts to take over, or when I'm triggered for some of my issues, like around abandonment and rejection, that I can overthink it, and that's where questions then can be get in my way of being able to take action. I find it's all related, the daring, the curiosity, the compassion, it's all related.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Good yeah. question.
The fact that you identified that, you know, in some areas of our lives, we can be and feel quite daring,
mm-hmm.
whereas in other aspects, you know, we can feel quite chicken scared,
yeah.
you know, yeah. knees quaking and the whole deal.
That's right.
And it's strange to wrestle with that dichotomy.
Mm.
I think both within ourselves, but also sometimes with how people see us.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people who might see us as brave and courageous and risk-taking, and then who see us in a light that, you know, where we're not expressing that level of courageousness, it breeds confusion.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, like how do you navigate being in a place where you can try to be more daring more of the time?
Mm-hmm. More consistent in that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that love piece is really important, that self-acceptance and self-love. Dang, you know, I kind of messed up today. I got to go in and own it now. And having the courage to do that. And then I just think that we expect people to be consistent, but really they're not consistent. Mm. They're not consistent when they're going through a learning process. And holding space for people to get to a place where they want to is also something that's really important. So it's not just me and how I grow into my consistency or my authenticity, but are the people around me open for that? And are they giving me feedback that's challenging me being able to achieve that? So I think, you know, I think there's the 50% of us of the stuff that we need to do inside, and then there's the 50% of us that creates the space and the form, the experiences with others for us to get to that place of self-acceptance or self-actualization in that. And that's our responsibility. I think that's our responsibility, is to have those people around us to help support us in that vision. A dear friend of mine, he died of ALS in April, and he talks about the five dimensions of self-acceptance. And they start with having a vision. How do I want to be? Do I want to be non-judgmental? Do I want to achieve freedom, compassionate? What are those things? And then it's up to us to create that form and that function, those experiences that allow us to achieve that. But if we keep picking the experiences that make us work on the stuff that we're not good at or that we don't want to achieve or challenge that, that can be really hard work. And then we need to do an evaluation assessment and look at and celebrate that of ourselves. I don't do that very well. That's something I'm going to work on. In fact, my 50th birthday was 2 days ago and I didn't tell anybody really, and we haven't celebrated it yet. And that celebration of how I've come and where I still want to go. And when I think of Sean Acre, he talks about the happiness advantage. And if we keep changing the yardstick and don't celebrate that achievement, we never really experience the happiness of that. We're always moving to the next thing. And I think pause is really important, that reflection time, that getting that feedback that says, wow, I see how far you've come. So it's complex for me. It's complex for me. And I think certain pieces need to be involved in that, having an environment, looking at our insides, celebrating ourselves, having a vision, having courage and grit, being compassionate, self-compassionate, making a commitment to that. When I was first deciding to become a mediator, I remember hiring some of the instructors at the Justice Institute and asking them to role play so I could analyze their patterns, because there wasn't enough in the classroom for me. And how many takes I took on providing or creating my assessment tape so that I felt good enough to let go of that, to be accepted. And even then, doubting whether or not I would pass. And that just was, when I look at that now, that's not realistic thinking. That's not very nice to myself. And so that love piece, knowing how to create that love through experience and challenges and successes and building that network. And it's not just the network that says, here, I'm your cheerleader for you. It's the network that says, whoa, have you thought about this? I don't know how to make some of the complex layers of growing into oneself in a way where there is self-acceptance or acceptance of others. But I think it's complex. It's complex work.
Yeah, I think it is complex work, and I think you've done quite a remarkable job just, in the last little bit that you were saying, to really demonstrate how complex it is with all the pieces that need to fit together in order to sort of spit out the other side, right?
Yeah.
Apart from all the sort of stuff that goes on internally in us and navigating that between what's going on externally from us, which is also a whole lot of complicated,
isn't it?
And then to figure out how to bridge that and show up as our authentic, genuine, loving, untriggerable selves is like holy mackerel.
Yeah. a
whole heap lot of work.
And for those people, I think, in our family that are seeing us in all these different relationships, they're going, you're inconsistent. You were this person here and this person here and this person here. And I'm like, yeah, but I was actually consistent in that. That's how I get to know people. So that part is consistent. But do I treat people differently? For sure. For sure. Because their energy and how I show up with them needs to flex a bit. It needs to ebb and flow and shape. And so... and I also believe that people are constantly in evolution. They're constantly rebirthing themselves in some way. And I hope they continue to embrace the inconsistency and pair that with some consistency. So there's a man by the name of Bernie Mayer who talks about we need paradoxes. We really can't have cooperation without having aspects of competition. And in his frame, competition is learning how to assert, right? We can't cooperate with somebody if people don't know what we need and what they need. And we can't make wise decisions if we don't consider the emotional and the thinking. And so I believe, and when we look at some motivational factors of people, they like consistency, but they also like change. And so it's hard for people to hold those paradoxes, though. And so I hope people are inconsistent, and I hope that they find or create space to help them consistently evolve.
Mm. It makes me think of this sort of term or state of being, natality, and that idea that in every given moment we are becoming.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that in every given moment we have the opportunity anyways to really like step into some new state of existence and a new state of being. And in that becoming, right, there's this element of sort of surprise, but we have to be daring enough.
Well said.
To step into that, you know? It also reminds me, I did some clowning a year or so back, and one of the things that I still think about pretty much on a daily basis, but also just gives me so much, not anxiety, but like anxiety in the sense that it really wrestles with my brain and how I can think about it, because the magic is that you become able to put innocence before experience.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, wow, how do you do that? And how do you be bold enough in the world as we age, especially, I think, where we feel confident enough to just be brand new.
Oh, I hear you. I am so over that. Yes. And that's where I think play is helpful. Learning with a horse, learning with Lego. I used to know somebody who used to say that every time he took a training, he'd go in with his white belt because he was a 4-time black belt. I try that sometimes, though, and what I find is that if somebody isn't holding the space of the room or leading it well, I can't put on my white belt anymore. I have to put on my black belt, and so I can disrupt the room. Mm. And that letting go process, I think, is really important. Play, laughter, pause. I used to think doing lots of things was a good idea. Now I don't think lots of things is a good idea. I think we need to find places of no to say yes to something else. And what's important for me as I move forward is carving out pause in my life. Pause to reflect, pause to look at it, pause to enjoy or celebrate the success of it, pause in just being in that moment, that presence. And that's hard work, and I'm working on it.
Let's take a pause and listen to a song, and then we'll come back and shift directions a little bit, but not drastically.
Let's do that.
You brought a couple of songs for us to listen to. Which should we listen to first?
Well, you know, I think we'll listen to Meghan Trainor's song there. Treat Myself. And I think there's a transition period for me right now about how do I make things mutual in how I do acts of service or support other people, but also make that mutual for myself. And so I like this. It's upbeat. It makes me want to dance. So I hope others enjoy it. Thank you.
Damn, I've been working real hard on myself and my health and my happiness. Hit pause on my life, took time on my mind, been working less. Cause I lost myself, I forgot myself, and I don't deserve it. Okay. Let me get myself ahead.
Triple Threat, Feminist 50-ish and Fabulous. I'm here with my guest, Tara Kowalski, and we were just talking before the song break about daring and stepping into courage and, you know, allowing ourselves to be present in the moment, and all of the things that sort of takes. And I want to shift over a little bit, because I feel like curiosity plays a part in all of this, and so, you know, it's one of the things that I ask all of my guests on this show. But I'm wondering what your relationship is with curiosity and how you allow it to play in your life, or, you know, how you manage to engage curiosity, or how it engages you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just overloaded thinking. So my work requires curiosity, so asking questions of others to help them dig into their stuff so that they can have that aha moment or that vision or that sense of excitement about how to move forward. And that relationship between those questions and seeing somebody else come to that excites me. It fills me up. it's really important for me to make sense of certain things. So love being one of those topics right now, or understanding loneliness, defining it, getting curious about what that is as far as how to support it and nurture it. Love is not attachment sometimes. Love is letting go of attachment at times. And love is creating space in order to experience for me. I know that I was thinking about love quite a bit recently, and about how, when is it do I really love something? When do I really love something? Because I have a lot of conditional love in my life, I would say. And when I think about those people that I have loved unconditionally, I made a choice to love them no matter what, no matter what they said, no matter what they did. So there's an attitude or a vision that comes along with that. Those places where I tried to convince myself I should love that didn't quite feel so good. And I usually got hit, and I don't think I took care of myself in that process either. Mm-hmm. So I lost the sight of self-love. So this whole part about understanding what is love, how is it cultivated, how do I nurture it, what branches do I have to prune so something else can grow, is really fascinating work for me. And having conversations with other people to make sense of that is part of the process. So I think curiosity is looking at those questions, daring greatly, being vulnerable with somebody else and bouncing some of that those ideas off, and not just with people that are aligned with me, but people that are different than me. Doing some research. I think it's about being present and also noticing the moment. Loneliness came to me as a result of the work that I do, and usually what I was finding is when people were going through a harassment process or had some significant conflict, they were really quite lonely. They didn't feel supported. They didn't know who to turn to. They felt they were a burden. Like, there was this whole loneliness isolation trap. And I had been traveling quite a bit for work, and I was in a hotel room working on a paper, and I just started to bawl my eyes out. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? You know, the snot was dripping. I was using pillows. I thought, oh, I'm not even going to go look at the mirror because I'm sure this is awful. And then I started to do some research on that, and I thought, oh my goodness, I'm lonely. And in that research, what was discovered is that this is not well researched. It's hard to research it. People who are lonely, it affects about 40-80% of people. It's become quite an issue because we have a minister of loneliness. It's usually related to unresolved conflict, and where people don't have structure. And so for me, what triggered it is I hadn't had structure for so long. I was living in hotel rooms, rushing to this, rushing to that. I didn't create the space to support that structure and combine it with the learning that I also need that motivates me in getting and helping people in moving through conflict so that they can get to those peaceful places, right? So for me, the curiosity is being present with what is the message, verbally or nonverbally, or the moment. What is that? How come it keeps showing up? What's the theme? And getting curious about it, and then inviting other people into that process.
Mm.
And then for me, that's not enough just to talk about it. And then it's to how am I going to action that and to make it of value to me. So if self-love and unconditional love is really important for me, because I had great mentors and I loved that about them and was inspired by that, what is it that I need to do to make that part of who I am? I do have some places of conditional love.
And as we all do.
As we all do. And I would really like to be able to know what that love is, where I'm not ruminating about it, where I have that experience and I can just let it go and say, ah. I certainly don't want to be, I don't think I'm a vindictive person or a revengeful person, but I have known people that are, and how that gets in their way in order for them to experience self-love. So I just really want to get curious about all this and then pull it in to give me some sort of sentence or meaning and then live it. To me, I want to live it. I want to grow it. I want to nurture it. And that love piece is just a theme that's really big for me right now. So I'm in the process of exploration and daring and actually putting it on a radio station so that everybody can hear me. Yeah. and it's valuable. And a big piece of that love is play. How do I play? And sometimes that play is sad play, and sometimes it's play silly play. So I'm looking at that.
I'm really curious about how you differentiate play. And just when you said play, I was like, oh yeah, of course, play is all about curiosity, right? It's about where that little rabbit hole is going to take you down, you know. Mm-hmm. what path is it going to sort of spit me out on the trail at, and what am I going to see? And then you said sad play, and I was like, oh, I'm really curious about that. My little antennae just poked right up. Yeah. But so yeah, I'm cognizant that that play, you know, those paths that we take can lead us to places where we are unexpected with all kinds of emotionality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that sadness just might be one of those places. But that it's also an important place to be able to play in for growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know, to be able to identify those things where we've experienced hurt, so that, you know, whatever you want to call it, your inner child or your heart or whatever can sort of identify now that that's not a coping mechanism anymore, or that, you know, you don't need to remain in that same place any longer.
You've got some choice yeah.
in the matter, you know, and that play can move that object to a whole different board game.
Exactly. And it's right? going to feel uncomfortable at first, i.e. the inconsistencies we talked about that people are experiencing, until we get to that place of comfort again. And if we've had a certain roadmap or a certain modeling, we need different modeling. And sometimes that play is so important to get to that. One of the areas I play with is different types of therapy. So right now I do somatic therapy, and I quite like it because I was trying to make sense with how come I know better, but my body responded differently. I'm like, I need that to be more aligned. And so the body has muscle memory too, and it will respond. And there's stuff that I'm really realizing that I've been packing, because there was always something to do, someone else to, there was kids to look after, there was a job or a business to support. And now I'm just kind of leaking out. Like, tears can start coming from anywhere. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is me experiencing and being playful. And the counselor is saying, you need to let that go so that you can get to the neutral zone to then create. And I'm, and when I know I need to cry, some people might find this funny or definitely relate to it, I might go and eat that whole cheesecake just so that it hurts, so that I cry after. Or I watch that show because I need to cry. And part of that process, and I think the movies that I'm interested in have really valuable information. When I am sad, I feel like I'm more reflective and more aware. And so I think sad play is important. I don't want to live there all the time. Anger play is one that I struggle a little bit with when I'm playing there a bit more. And, of course, I just love to laugh. So I see the nuances in a day. But I do think that we need to shape or look at what does play look like for us to give us that complex experience. Because just one type of play won't give us the contrast for us to know what we really like or what we need or how to evolve into those new places.
Yeah, back to having the contrast or the paradox where you can play off of one another, right, in order to really understand the bits and pieces and how it creates the whole.
Exactly. Some of the people I work with in the workplace, for instance, those that have been in the same job for 10, 12, 15 years. Now, I would never do that. I've had a business for 11 years, but that's probably the longest. They're so complacent and they're bored, which is a form of anger, that I really think that it would be a good idea for them to try something else for 6 months, or get that contrast and find out what they like, or tap into some of that stuff that's been stuffed that is their fabulous three. You know, we can get in environments where we shut down that fabulousness because the environment doesn't support it. So to get out of that complacency, taking that risk or that dare, putting ourselves in other areas that would be uncomfortable, I think is rich to really getting to what it is we want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And allowing ourselves to be curious about what that might look like for us.
Oh.
You know, who we might be coming into.
Yeah.
If we did that.
And that inspires me. There's leaders I've worked with that have noticed that for their staff. I remember this one fellow, we had six supervisors. They were stuck, complaining all the time. He read all the signs. He says, I'm going to all put you all in different places for 6 months. And they had resistance. They went away and they loved it. They came back and they and I thought, man, that is a courageous leader. And I want to lead myself in that same way. And as a result of that, some people don't believe in what I do, and people that are really important for me, and they find me inconsistent. They're not sure how to relate to me. Oh. So there's a lot of work that happens whenever we make those changes and that we dare greatly. So if we're willing to take that risk, be prepared and I think be present to the consequences it could have to those people that were really connected, now they're confused about how to relate. There's a care piece that comes in the cleanup of that risk. And so so I think about that. What does it take for me to be courageous? And what do I need to complete it or clean it up or show care to those when I'm making those changes so that they can receive me and not take it personally?
Right. Big. Right? Yeah,
it's big
no,
stuff.
It's big.
Like, it's a lot of work. Change is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I prepare myself for that? You know, when I'm resistant to stuff, it's like, geez, why am I getting in my own way? How am I going to let that go?
Right. Yeah. And then for other people who have an investment in who you are now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That change also becomes risky and.
Yeah. Yeah.
Problematic, potentially. Right. Yeah.
So to dare that, and I think that's where I was speaking about before, is it, in order to take, I can take risk and dare. What I'm finding is it makes it a whole lot, I won't say easier, but a whole lot more, I'm more likely to take risks if I have my support environment there, if I've got those people that I can lean into afterwards or doing to go through that. And in the workplace, what I will find is people are less likely to take risk if they don't feel supported. And that gets in their way, that whole trap.
Mm.
So building that for ourselves is our responsibility so that we can dare to lead and live the life that we want to live and be the people we want to be.
Right. Yeah. I'm conscious of time, and I want to jump in and play another song and then come back just for the last sort of 12 to 15 minutes or so and talk a little bit about wisdom, which, you know, we could probably spend a good hour just on its own about. The second song that
the second
you brought.
Song, well, I feel like I'm coming out. I was once told that when you hit your 50s, all of a sudden, you know, our chemistry changes and we start to go back to taking care of ourselves. And so I feel like I'm coming out again. I'm rebirthing something. And this song speaks to that. I don't know what people are totally going to expect, but I hope they're open to the fact that I'm coming out in a different way.
Come here.
I'm in the studio with Tara Kowalski, my guest on Triple Threat, Feminist 50-ish and Fabulous. My name's Robin. And before the song break there, we were talking about all of the complexities it is to be curious and to sort of have the tenacity in some ways to just pursue curiosity. And I want to turn, as I said before the song, and just take the last sort of 8 minutes and talk about wisdom. Because, you know, we get to this sort of midlife stage in life, and I don't know about you, but wisdom sort of was bandied around that, you know, I would hit a certain older age and I would have this wisdom. And so what does wisdom mean to you? Do you feel wise? Do you feel like you live in wisdom? What gives you wisdom?
No, I think the older I get, the more confused I get. And I try to simplify that, right? What are my guiding principles? How am I going to live? I have intentions. I don't know if wisdom is just a thought process, though. As we were speaking at the break, it comes out in our body when we're not paying attention. It could show up as a lump, or it can show up as burnout. I think that, wisdom is also situational, potentially, for the situation. What wisdoms am I going to pull out in this moment? It's a moving target. I think wisdom's a moving target. And it requires patience and thoughtfulness and action. And I don't know what wisdom is anymore. Because the things that I thought were guidance, I no longer believe in that. I no longer believe in independence, for instance. I grew up, you know, it's good that you pay for your school. It's good that you do all the stuff. You do it on your own. I disagree with that now. I think we need connection. We need support. I think that asking for help is a big thing that I have to learn how to do better. And when I become comfortable in that, that'll be good. I think wisdom is a felt sense, actually. Maybe if I would put something around it, it's when it feels good in that moment. And it's about trusting or aligning what our thoughts are, what our heart is telling us, what the spirit is telling us. A friend of mine calls it the global me. When I take care of the global me, I feel wise. You know what? That's a really good question. I don't have a good answer for it. All I know is it's I'm confused by wisdom.
I like how you refer to it as a moving target, because I think it is a bit of a moving target. And I also like that it's part of an assessment process, right? Like if we're not really thinking and evaluating what we know and how we know that, you know, and how our experience leads us to make choices about something that, you know, is the same or different, depending, then are we really utilizing wisdom? Are we employing it in our lives, or are we just sort of feeling through life blindly?
I don't know. I use, you know, the education. I used it when I was bored or lost or struggling with something. Actually, I used it to avoid. I used it to avoid my life if I had to work on a master's or a certificate. And in that process, though, it allowed me to give some words and help me form or make things a little bit more clearer for myself. And I use that wisdom or that knowledge to hustle people, hustle them to believe or to be influenced by me. And I'm not sure that some of that knowledge is helpful anymore if I'm using it to hustle or to be relatable or to be accepted. And so, and I believe that that wisdom also is within. And if we don't tap into those experiences, there's people that that have told me about their experience and they've come to this awesome wisdomness. And I say, oh, yeah, there's theory, but they're like, oh, here, I thought it was my own idea. And I'm thinking, oh, isn't that awesome? Right? They were listening to that. They came up to that on their own. And yet they could confirm it with what some other theories are doing. So I think wisdom is a moving target. It's not just what we study. It's an internal experience, and because we've experienced it, we're more likely to listen to it. And wise is not everything. Maybe is another way to put it. Being wise is not everything, and there's just too much diversity to know how that wisdom's going to link or intercept or connect and synchronize. I do believe, though, that wisdom has a cognitive sense, it has an emotional sense, it has a physical sense, and it has a spiritual sense. And when those three are together, or those four are together, it feels really good. And I think, I think wisdom is a felt sense, probably.
I was just thinking that, you know, we can sort of rely on wisdom sometimes and maybe rest on our laurels, because it's like, oh, I have this wisdom and I'm holding it out like a shiny ball or something, which almost gets us off the hook for being engaged,
right?
In a way,
right. It can also be a place where it allows other people to judge us. It's like, right?
Yeah.
But it can get us off the hook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the potentials of it are as widespread as all the other things that we've talked about today, and certainly as complex. And, you know, our relationships with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, and we can't be everything. And I think that's another thing. But if I were to look at, you know what, I'm so confused by this conversation. Now I'm going to go away and think about it and talk to other people about it, which is great, because that's exciting. It's also, wisdom is a vision, perhaps, is the way I might look at it, is where do we want to have our wisdoms? For me to try and tell my daughter how to do something right now, she wants to experience it before she'll believe it. So my wisdom doesn't matter, just doesn't matter. And yet I look to others and their wisdom to help give me guidance about how to move something when I'm stuck. So... it is valuable, without a doubt. I think it's about playing with wisdom for the situation and where you are and what your strengths are. I think that play word comes back in for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely been one of the words of the hour.
Yeah.
For sure. Play. I want to just give you sort of the last word, I guess. You know, it something that, I don't know, a sentence that kind of is on your mind, or, you know, something that might, I don't want to say wrap it all up, because I think, as you said, you know, it's there's a bunch of ideas now cooking about.
I don't know if I have a word or a sentence, because I don't think that way, but I wished I did sometimes. But I do have a short story, and I usually end most of my facilitations with this, but it's about a young boy, and he wants to move a boulder. And he says, "Dad, I'm going to go move that boulder," all excited, stoked out. And the father says, "Hey, I believe in you, son. Use all of your strength." So he goes over, he pushes on it, gets his feet under, gets a stick, deliver it, and he can't move it. And he comes back, very disappointed. And he says, Dad, I couldn't move that boulder. And the father says, did you use all of your strengths? And the boy says, yeah, I used my muscles. And the father says, but you didn't use me. And I think when we're navigating or journeying through life, yes, it's great to have a vision. And yes, continue that passion and don't get stuck by that boulder. Figure out what you need to, what the resources are, the people you are, how you need to play in order to get over that or abandon it. But that boulder is a stop pause for you to think and remember to use all of your resources, not just what you've got inside, but those that are available to you, and don't be afraid to ask.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you, Tara Kowalski, who has been my guest here on Triple Threat, Feminist 50-ish and Fabulous. For this episode, you can find... Whoa. You can find... oh, my goodness.
See, you're playing with stuff. This is so fun, isn't it?
It's live and spontaneous radio. Here we are. You've been listening to Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. And you can connect with me at Aging with Imagination on Facebook, where you'll find links to the audio archive of the show. You can also find them here on cjsf.ca under the program schedule Intravenous by Date. My name is Robin Erickson, and I have been your host. See you next month when we continue to challenge the anti-aging cultural narrative of women in midlife.
Thank you.